song is by one of the more interesting band names I think I've ever heard. The song is called Freak of the World, which, well, Vince is here, so we have one of those. And the band name is Puddle of Mud. Very interesting band name, right, Vince? Would you agree with that?
I do love the band name. Yeah,
if you heard the stories of bands like making their names in like a group, and you're sitting down at a couch or whatever, and you're thinking of a name for a band and stuff like that, who comes up with Puddle of Mud? Like, who's the guy in the band that suggests that? And the other guy's like, you know what? Yeah, that works.
Yeah,
it's a crazy name.
Well, it's such a great, like, early 2000s grungy.
Yeah, and that's
metal.
Exactly what they are.
Yeah,
that's exactly what
they
are.
They nailed it.
If you're interested in that, Gray, you could follow us on all of our social medias at _ Brian McCann at Last Out Media. I wanna preface this episode is one of the cooler episodes I think that we've ever done. We are having on Juliette Brewer. Her dad and her run the Reptile Zoo in California. If you're not aware of the Reptile Zoo, get aware. They have like a million Instagram followers. They post videos of them. They take care of reptiles for a living. They have like their own zoo. It is the most miraculous stuff I've ever seen. I'm like addicted to these videos. I watch them constantly. Like, you know, everyone knows like on Facebook when you go to the video part of the app and you just sit there and you can get in one of those binges, right? For like hours and hours and hours.
Oh,
and
yeah.
On YouTube and stuff, right? We've all been there, right? This is my binge channel. So I'm getting to interview the people of my late night binge YouTube channel. So I'm very, very excited for that interview. You can catch that at the end of the show. But first, Vince, I'm going to be a little selfish today, okay?
For the first time.
Yes. We don't do a ton of hockey talk because hockey's just not a mainstream in New York. But when the Rangers are a dominant team, hockey becomes a mainstream sport in New York. The Garden is filled every night. It's a big storyline. And it's finally become that, Vince. I was at the Garden last night for the Rangers' 6-3 victory over the Maple Leafs. And I look at that game as a microcosm of their season. It shows what kind of hockey team they are now. They went down 3-1 to one of the most prolific offenses in the entire sport. And they won the game 6-3. Didn't give up another goal after that. They scored 5 unanswered goals to close out that game. The Rangers are one of the youngest teams in the entire NHL. They have multiple guys on their roster that haven't even played 3 seasons yet. They have been built perfectly, exactly the way that you know. It's like if you look at an NFL team, right? What are the key things that you need on your roster to win a Super Bowl, right? That every Super Bowl team, for the most part, really needs to have locked in, right? You need a quarterback, right? You need an elite-level offensive lineman, right? At least one or two on your line. You need a playmaker, right? You need like a wide receiver, a running back. All those teams have at least one guy that's a superstar playmaker, and you need a great defensive player, like a defensive lineman that's going to give you 15 sacks that's going to be able to rush the quarterback, right? Hockey's the same way. It's why I fell in love with hockey so much as a young age, because the way it's got so many comparables to other sports. This sport really just compares to so many other sports. And here's why. Rangers are young. The Rangers have now become an aggressive team that you don't want to play tough against because you can't match up with them. They have lethal goal scorers. They have great goaltending. They have everything you need out of a hockey team. And this is why I respect this franchise a lot. And it weirds me out to say that because they're also owned by Jim Dolan, who does a terrible job with the Knicks, who leaves the Rangers alone. The Rangers put out a letter in 2018 telling their fan base, we're going to rebuild. Announcing to the fan base, we're not going to go through with our veteran players. We're going to rebuild, right? We're going to trade away players that you might love. They did the rebuild perfectly. There's a lot of value in sports, Vince, to young teams, I feel. Players in their rookie years, players that are really young. You know why? Because you have guys playing that don't know what expectations are, don't know what the consequences are for losing, don't get it, and don't care. They're playing just beyond freely. There's no consequences to their game. None of it matters. I compare this a lot to the Chiefs. What was it, 2018, when they won their first Super Bowl, right? That's what I compare this to. You have Pat Mahomes, basically a player in his rookie year. It's his second year, but he's first year playing full-time. A player like that who is just playing so loose, so freely, and doesn't care. You have young players on the team like Tyreek Hill, right? You have and you have a solid defense, and you have a full, a well-rounded team with a great coach, right? And they're just playing loose, and they're just playing, they don't care, and look what happens. They win a Super Bowl. They're a dominant team the entire year. There is value in sports in youth. Not just because they can be more talented, not just because It's the mental game, Vince, where the youth in the sport right now, of where the Rangers are in general as a hockey team, this team is young. Team doesn't care. The team makes mistakes and outplays those mistakes. It is so valuable to what they are. I mean, they fire David Quinn last year, right? And it was a big move. You bring in a new GM in Chris Drury, and he immediately fires the coach. And everyone freaks out. They fired their president, fired their GM, brought in the assistant GM, moved him up, and he immediately fires the coach. And everyone's like, this guy's in his third year. How could you fire him so instantly with a young team and a young core that you're building? How do you just shake it up like this? They shook it up and brought in Gerard Gallant. And look at this team now. They're the best team in the Eastern Conference. They're the best team in the Eastern Conference. And it scares me to say that. We had Emily Kaplan on, what, a month ago? And they weren't, she said literally to us, they were an up-and-coming team, but she thought they were 2 to 3 years away. And in that last month, they are by far the best team in the NHL. Think about where they've come right now. The Eastern Conference playoffs, if you look at hockey, are set. But again, a game like last night is so key to me, right? You're at home, you go down 2-0, it's primetime game on TNT, you go down 2-0 real quick, score a goal to make it 2-1, and then you go down 3-1 going into the second period, and you don't give up. You come out and dominate the rest of that game against one of the best teams in the sport. That's one of those keystone moments of a season where you look at it and you go, that right there, where a team, you could be down, doesn't matter, you're going to keep fighting, you're going to win the game 6-3 when you're down 3-1 in the second period. This team's got a lot to it that it's freaking me out as a Ranger fan because I'm not prepared for a team to be good. But it's little things, right? You ever notice in football, you see this all the time, right? Or in baseball. Baseball's a better example, right? Midway through a season at the deadline, a team adds a reliever. And that guy just becomes the difference maker. You see in football too, right? Look at the Rams right now, right? Adding Von Miller. Or how about Odell Beckham Jr.? He got a touchdown in what, 6 straight games now? Adding a guy midseason that... We didn't think much of the Odell acquisition, right? We thought, nice signing, maybe we'll see if it works out. A lot of people didn't like it, but you didn't think that much of it, right? Look how key he's been for them. Look how much free space he gives Cooper Kupp around the field. Rangers acquired Ryan Reeves, who, tough guy, tough attitude, but you don't expect much out of a guy like that, right? You expect him to come in and hit people, basically. That's what you expected out of him. Comes in, he scored 2 goals last night. First 2 goals as a Ranger. But it's the attitude that a guy like that brings to the team, right? He's saying on national television during interviews, like, no, we are a contender. We're not pretending. We are a contender. He's instilling that confidence into the locker room. He's going out there and be aggressive on the ice. You know what that turns into? More guys on the team that aren't afraid to be aggressive. Last year, their biggest problem, right? The reason why they claim the general manager and the president were fired last year is because the game against the Capitals in the end of the season, when Artemi Panarin, your best player, is launched onto the ice, Tom Wilson throws him onto the ice, and no one seemed to defend him. You look at this team now, no one's going to touch players like Panarin. Panarin's not going to get touched by another player because another player knows if he touches Panarin, he's going to get a beating from not just Reeves, but guys like Jacob Trouba, guys like Patrick Nemeth are going to be coming for you because they now have that confidence that if you come for them, there's going to be another line of guys coming right after you. It's a whole team trickle-down effect. It's why teams like the Rams bring in Odell and it frees up Cooper Kupp more and it frees up Van Jefferson more and it opens up the run game for Cam Akers. It's a trickle-down effect in all of sports. I'm not sitting here saying that they're winning a cup. I'm not. But when you look at a team like the LA Rams, right, with a guy like Cooper Kupp and Odell in star receivers, great quarterback in Stafford, Andrew Whitworth, a star offensive lineman, and Aaron Donald on your defensive line with Jalen Ramsey in the back end, and then I look at a team like the Rangers that can roll 4 lines consistently, that has elite goaltending in Shesterkin, Mika Zibanejad, Adam Fox, Artemi Panarin, Chris Kreider, all elite offensive players that can put up 30 goals in any season, and elite defensive play out of this team. Not saying they're winning a cup right now this year. They may be too young for that right now. But this team being on the up and up, this is one of the better teams in the entire sport. And it really is tremendous. I know you're not the biggest hockey guy in the world, but there is a point to be made in a young, stupid team in sports, right? That just doesn't even care. They're just out there playing the sport for fun, right?
Yeah. You know what I think of a little bit? I think of like Penny and Shaq. Uh-huh. Way back in the day, just really young guys, absolutely dominant together. It was like, oh, are these guys going to take over the league together? And obviously that didn't really happen, but it was a really cool thing to see. On some level, it's funny seeing it from the Philly side of things, like individually. Carson Wentz, when he comes into the league, and the level of free and confident that he was playing. And then
completely agree.
All the stuff that goes into it, the way his brain just melted. He became jaded as the years went on because the pressure, expectations on himself, on the team, whatever.
But likely, isn't it kind of hard to argue that that year the Eagles might still win the Super Bowl if Wentz doesn't get hurt?
Yeah.
There's a chance they still win the Super Bowl. Wentz was playing at an MVP level, right? So there's, and again, I go to Mahomes. I go to even Herbert last year, where it's just the pressure of the game and then the press conference, everything that goes into being the quarterback of a team, it doesn't hit you when you're at that age. It doesn't. It's just whatever. I'm just going to go out there and chuck the football around and see what happens. And that's the same way the Rangers are playing right now. It's just, I'm going to go out there, skate, score some goals, have some fun, see what happens. There's no pressure of New York under them right now. And that's the problem with the Knicks right now, is that the pressure of Madison Square Garden and expectations to win are just crumbling on top of them. But there's a lot of stories of this. Russell Wilson, 2012, 2011, right? Third round pick, chip on his shoulder. There you go. Go. You see it a lot in sports, Vincent. There's a lot of value to teams like this. They're really young teams that just don't care.
Yeah.
San Francisco Giants last year, right? Just don't care. Just out there, just playing the sport for fun.
It's a beautiful thing to see. I mean, when you see what team building is in that science, because we always get roped into exclusively talent.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't always appreciate, like, oh, this guy's a number three wide receiver. Who cares? It's like, no, the team loves
that
guy.
A locker room, coaching. I mean, a guy like Van Jefferson for the Rams. Look at how valuable he is to that team. And is he going for 1,000 yards? No, but he's extremely valuable to that. Just the roster breakdown. Which, by the way, from last week, how impressive is it the fact that Cam Akers is on a torn Achilles cutting down the field like that? Healing after 4 months, like just a bionic human being.
Dude, the way medical advancements have happened, we're now like ACL tears went from a year to 9 months.
A career-ending injury doesn't exist anymore. Unless it's like a spinal injury, like a Ryan Shazier. That doesn't exist anymore. There's no such thing as a career-ending injury. It just isn't. You're back from a concussion in 3 weeks now. I mean, it's maybe less, especially in the NFL. Like, it's wild to me.
Yeah.
Like,
there's still stuff that limits you a little bit. Like, I think the biggest one now in terms of injuries to come back from and be close to the same guy, it's the patella. Mm-hmm. Guys tear the patella. Like, Jimmy Graham tore his patella, and after that, right off.
Okay,
the
but you know what the big one was back in the day is Cy Young surgery. Remember when, not Cy Young, Tommy
John. Tommy John.
Remember when you needed Tommy John surgery, and a pitcher needed that, his career was over. Now they come back stronger from Tommy John.
It's pitchers crazy.
You're throwing 99 going into Tommy John. You come back and you're throwing 102. I mean, pitchers become better after Tommy John surgery.
It's going to be like plastic surgery, where it's going to be like, all right, well, I'm going to get Tommy John this year, and then I'm going to tear my ACL that year.
And like, so on New York Groove, I've always said that I like to do different kind of interviews, not just focus on sports necessarily. Focus on stuff that really interests me because, you know, you get my kind of vibe on the show. We had Emily Kaplan on a few weeks ago talking about NHL stuff. And this week, I think, you know, I'm 24 years old and I think our entire lives of young kids, right? We spent a lot of time on YouTube, right? And a lot of the last year for me has been spent on YouTube on a channel called The Reptile Zoo. I'm very fascinated by animals that terrify me. So, and I'm being joined now by Juliet Brewer, whose father started the Reptile Zoo, right? And now you're one of the main, what, zoologists would you call yourself at the Reptile Zoo?
No, I wouldn't call myself a zoologist.
What would you call yourself?
Just like reptile handler.
Reptile handler.
Enthusiast, excited about it.
So here's the thing about reptiles, okay? I'm terrified of them. I really am. Like, I've never handled them in my life. I'm a dog. I have a dog at home. I have a couple fish in a fish tank. That's about my expertise.
That feels normal.
you, I see on the channel, are very good at dealing with the monitor lizards for sure. Mm-hmm. Crocodiles, which is crazy.
Alligators,
right? Alligators, yeah. And snakes. The first thing I want to ask you about snakes, how did you make dealing with snakes and all these dangerous animals in your life so normal?
It's what I know. It's my normal. I'm way more familiar with all this stuff than I am with dogs and cats. So, again, I'm 30 years old. I've literally been around reptiles my whole entire life, since, like, infancy. So it's normal. It's the most normalized thing. I was raised of, like, oh, it's weird that you don't know how to interact with 20-foot pythons at 5 years old. That's bizarre.
So you grew up in your house like with just snake cages around, and like, is that what your house grew up with? Like,
no. So we have, my whole existence, we've had some form of what is here now.
Okay.
Just a little bit. So now we have a zoo, so it's just more organized. But we've always bred reticulated pythons, which are those huge snakes that you see. We've always had a little bit larger animals. It's what my dad is stoked about. So I was always raised with large tortoises, large snakes, big monitors. We would have one that would like walk around the shop and stuff. So it's what I know. It's probably the easiest way to put it. So
growing up in school, when you had like friends and stuff that you would bring over, like when you got a friend that has like a golden retriever that they take it for a while, like how different, like were you able to bring friends around these animals and stuff and like show them that, yeah, hey, I've got this is my pet reticulated python, George. Is that how it worked for you? Like, that's just, it's so fascinating to me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Also my friends, they knew that was something that we did. So it wasn't like, oh, my dad kind of does this on the side. It's like a full throttle business. And there's not a lot of reptile people in our community, especially of what we have. Mm-hmm. So, and it was right next to my school. So people, they knew about it. It was just, again, it was normal. We're like, cool, weirdo.
So, when it comes to all these dealing with these dangerous animals and stuff, I feel like what you guys tend to mention on your episodes a lot. I guess I'll call them episodes on like Facebook and YouTube and stuff. Yeah. What you guys tend to mention a lot is, at least your dad definitely does, is these guys are not pets. Like, you don't want to be the crazy guy in Florida that has the python in his basement, because you do see those stories and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the biggest misconception about these kinds of animals? Is it that they can be pets for people? Or is it that they're not as dangerous as people think they are? What's the line there?
I would say the biggest misconception is that they're these like wild, exotic, psychotic animals. Where, like, to put it plainly, my monitor lizard does the same things to me that everybody's cat in their home that they sleep in does to them. Mm-hmm. They claw them in the face. They accident or on purpose bite them in the arm. Like, mine's just a monitor lizard. Like, it's just knowing their personalities. There's never been anything in culture as like, you should love scaly stuff or bigger monitors or lizards or anything, where so much of our heart is like, no, they're really sweet. You just have to know their personality, and it makes you understand. So that's why we like to like educate a ton, is because through the education comes understanding, and you're like, oh, not that bad. Not that bad. Granted, it does. I don't think I make it look that easy, but it is a lot of work. It is a relationship. So you don't just like go like pick up a monitor and you're like, cool. Like, I've been doing that a good amount of my life, so I know how to do it. I know what their next five steps are, things like that. But I'd easily say the biggest misconception is just that there's this like psychoticness to them, because nobody understands
that. What I'm amazed by that is, from what I see on the videos, you basically essentially raised the albino alligator you guys have in Coconut's the name of the alligator, right?
Coconut, yeah,
yes.
Coconut.
You've essentially raised that alligator, and it's crazy that you've seen the growth of this gator obviously get much, much, much bigger. But from the time this thing was a baby, you've raised it, and when you handle it now, the gator seems to be like perfectly normal with you, as if you're handling a puppy. But that gator can still essentially take your arm off if it wanted to at any moment, right?
Yeah.
So like, you kind of gotta like, I guess you gotta like develop that relationship, right? Where you gotta always be on your toes.
Yeah. So it's a little bit more complex than that. So we've had her for about a year or so. And she has grown an exponential amount during that year. My favorite thing to do is feed animals, and I really enjoy doing it. So I actually got in trouble for feeding her too much. So we've slowed down her feeding, but she is crazy. So when we initially got her, she was like wild. So through that, we don't necessarily call it training. It's more socialization, because they do, the way you make them nice is you just hold them and you just kind of absorb what they have to give you. And for her, that was like, she's extremely strong. She's different than our other alligators. Our other alligators were rescues. So they were, excuse me,
yeah,
a little bit malnutrition or something like that, where she was not malnutrition. This girl like still comes with like such a pack. But the way that we kind of figured it out is, which I love, is also my favorite thing to do, is just like, as you're interacting with them, you just have to continually interacting with them and not be so scared and nervous. Cause she 100%, like, she bit my dad, like the top of my dad's finger off the first time we had her. Which like, he was a little dramatic about that, not gonna lie. like through that, like the way that I deal with it is I am going in, I'm choosing to go in. She has the potential to bite me, mm-hmm. but I am now knowing that. And I'm working out of that confidence that she wants to, necessarily wants to, but like she has the capacity to get confused in between. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought I was eating versus like, no, this is, we're going to do some socialization time. So with that, I go in very slowly. I know how she wants to be touched. So I usually will grab the base of her tail. And she'll, if she goes really fast back and forth, that means I'm like, nah, you're going to have to get me in a different position. So I let her get comfortable. And then I just, you have to just be. So there's like such a false confidence to working with animals because so much of it is just their response to you moving them. And mm-hmm. if they don't feel secure, they're going to respond because their whole job is to stay safe. They're instinctual. Through instinctions, they're like, what do I have to do? This person's coming and grabbing me versus like, oh, okay. I feel supported. I feel okay. I don't feel threatened. I must be fine. So I work very hard to make sure every time, whether I know she's going to be psychotic or not, that she does not feel threatened, that she doesn't feel like I'm coming to like rip her out of her enclosure, that it's literally like, oh, cool, here we go. So, and once that like weight of the water is gone, that's where she starts to move a little bit. But again, I've already in my mind processed. I know what's going to happen. I know she's going to kind of, so I tighten up a little bit. They're extremely, extremely strong animals. Mm-hmm. So I just hold it really hard and that lets her move around just as much as she needs. So she still feels very in control, but she has zero control of the situation, which hopefully is a good response for me as a handler that I am able to take care of that correctly. Mm-hmm. And the amount of strength she gives me, I can absorb it and not make her feel any type of issues with that, which is nice because that's why she's nice. She understands it. Uh-huh. She recognizes it. She responds well to it. And if she doesn't, we'll let her chill for a little bit and we'll come back. Because I'm dramatic. She's allowed to be dramatic. So we'll give her moments to be dramatic. and then we'll circle back around.
Basically. Juliet Brewer from the Reptile Zoo is joining us. You guys have 1.6 million Instagram followers, which is pretty freaking crazy. The video that seems to come up a lot of the time that I see is the video of you feeding your other giant gator, Darth Gator, where I believe you're feeding him chicken and he essentially jumps out of the enclosure. Is that the most dangerous, terrifying thing that's happened on this job for you? Or is there something else that you could disclose? Because I'm sure there's some crazy stories that you've got.
No, and it's okay. And it's actually not that dangerous because this guy, as he jumps out. So for alligators, they have a high momentum. So they're built to be in the water to jump out into the land. Mm-hmm. They're not designed to get anything on the land. So whenever you see videos of them in the wild or in different areas, they'll like do this like mad dash of like, mm-hmm. and then you literally see them go, and then they like turn back around and go to the water because they're out of their territory. So the second that guy lands on the ground very smoothly, if you look at the video, he literally like rolls out like, I don't know what. Then he's like, oh man, I didn't mean to do that. And he doesn't move. Like they don't go forward and backwards. They go side to side. Uh-huh. So if I was sitting next to him, 100%. That's not. But again, I know what's going on. It may not look like I know what's going on, but I promise you, I get a lot of slack from that video, which I feel fine about. I feel fine about it. But forward and backwards, they don't do very well. But side to side, they do. I was perfectly safe. There was literally zero issues with that. He sat on the floor for the next hour until my dad was able to come. It was like 10 p.m. at night. So I like called my dad. I was like, hey, it's a lot of work putting him back in.
I can imagine.
Hey, I'm so sorry. Like Darth jumped out and he was like, no, I don't want to go in.
Yeah.
Like,
he's two or three beers deep by that point. It's he has no desire to come do this.
He's like, yes, that is the video that I get.
So what other dangerous, like close counted stuff has happened to you in with these animals and stuff? I'm sure there's stuff like, you have any fingers missing? Oh, good. No pieces of fingers missing. No hands missing. No. Wow. No. It's crazy to me. Like, I feel like if I was put in these situations, I mean, of course, I've never dealt with these animals before, but it's just, it's the calmness that you guys show when dealing with these. What fascinates me is I've learned from your videos is when you feed them the chicken, right, as you're always going from like the side of their mouth. But the chomp, the noise that makes is like if you have your hand in there, it's crazy to me. So is that the case, like, with you guys? Is like when you're touching their heads and stuff, just don't go near the side because then they're gonna get you? Is that the case? I mean, it's fascinating to me.
Totally. A little bit, but also when doing that, we normally will do it at the end. Because they're like, I'm so tired. Like, we're, again, they're big animals. They're moving around a lot. Mm. Even just in that motion of going up and down to getting the chicken, which we also sometimes do that because it's good enrichment. In the wild, like I was saying, they got to dart out. That's a lot of energy for them. It's healthy. I mean, if I just sat on my couch all day and then ate, like, I'm going to get chunky. I'm going to have zero muscle tone. Mm-hmm. So that actually is like a form of enrichment of making them move around and stuff like that. But when touching them on the nose, that is usually, again, they're like, I'm done. Like, I'm literally, most of the times when they do that, you'll see them kind of like go back. It's because they're literally like, yeah, I'm going to retreat. I'm good. I got all the chicken I want. And that's kind of a, yeah. But that's always really fun to do because we're like, aw, cute little dog.
Have you dealt with venomous snakes? Do you guys have them in your enclosures there?
We do. My dad has. I do not. I do not work with venomous. I'm not going to pretend like I know what venomous is. I do know how to interact with them simply because I am high up in management here. So I do need to know.
Yeah,
if he's not, or other, if Tim, our other person, is not here, I have the keys. I need to make sure that everything's going on. That's well. But that is as far. I have interacted with them literally once in my probably 15 years of working here.
So
and I don't desire to do anything.
There is a guy online who he's been injecting himself with snake venom for 3 decades now. Do you know what I'm talking about? You seem like you've
no, not specifically, but just more of it's just great.
Well,
it sounds like Dwight from The Office.
Well, he's like made almost a career out of it where he does this for a purpose. Like, he trains his body to learn in, like, it's smaller doses, and then he gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And then he finds the actual snake and lets it bite him to see how his body will react to the venom. It's like, this is a thing to me where, like, so one of the places that we debated on the show many times of going to, we have, you know, our producer, our co-host, everything, is Australia, right? So have you been to Australia before?
I have.
I'm assuming as an animal person, you love Australia. So
incredible.
I really want to go to Australia, but I'm also terrified to go to Australia because I've just heard it's like everything that can kill you is there.
Yeah, basically. They're in New Zealand. 100% there.
My friend told me a story when he went to Australia to study abroad where he was in the bathroom when he first got there and he looked up at the ceiling and there was a spider on the ceiling that was like the size of his hand. And he's like, if this thing jumps down towards me, I'm done.
It is what it is.
So how is Australia, if I can ask you then? Like, what is the vibe around there? Because I'm assuming you went for animal purposes, right?
Yes. So I went to like the bush. So I went to Darwin, which is the most northwest part of Australia, if I'm looking at it correctly. Mm-hmm. So like Sydney's over here, Darwin's over here.
Okay.
So it is like the bush. I loved it. We went and hung out with Matt Wright, and we got to, does a ton of conservation with crocodilians there and stuff like that. It was incredible. Like, I wanted to move there. Like, actually try to take steps forward to move there, if that kind of puts it in perspective. They were my people. They're incredible. The people are beautiful, just like the nicest, kindliest, friendliest, but will also like cuss you out in 3 milliseconds if you make a wrong turn, which I love. I love that people, they're like, this is how it is, man. We're like, you know what? I needed that. Thank you. and then their animals are gorgeous. They have crocodiles. So crocodiles, the difference between alligators and crocodiles, they call our alligator, or like American alligators, dumpy frogs with teeth. So dumpy frogs are like this big, chunky green frog.
Uh-huh.
They call, and I'm like, because I knew they called it that. And I was like, oh, interesting. Like, I mean, our gators are like not wildly intense or dangerous, but the difference between alligators and crocodiles legitimately want to eat you. Like,
oh, it's that bad.
It's so bad. Like, so bad. They're wild. They're crazy.
Because they got I've seen these videos, right? So they have the giant, they have the 20-foot anaconda or pythons out there, the snakes that are, the reticulated snakes are out there. The poisonous snakes are definitely everywhere over there, venomous snakes there. they have the crazy sized spiders, all right, that are the size of your hand. They've probably got scorpions somewhere out there. The crocodiles are now, I'm hearing, are insane. They're not like the alligators.
They're
where
insane.
You can,
they right? will drag you. And
then I've seen videos on.
Literally said by like the duck bill of your hat, they'll take you in.
And then I've seen videos online of the kangaroos that are like jacked out of their mind that'll have fist fights with you. This to me as a guy that doesn't know how to deal with animals is not appealing. And I want to see Australia. I feel like to go to Australia, I'd only be confident going if I were going with like someone like you who's like knows what they're doing. Like if we are walking in the road and we approach a black mamba, you'll know how to get us out of that situation where I would just freak out.
No offense. Do you want to go to the bush of Australia or do you want to go to like Sydney, Australia?
Well, no, because if I go somewhere, I want to see like
nowhere.
When I went to Canada 2 years ago, right, I went like 190 miles north of Toronto to like the Arctic. When I see that country, I want to see your country. I don't just want to go to your main city. I want to see I want to go to your dive bars. I want to go to your wetlands and like your crazy stuff.
Okay. Know that their dive bars all have enclosures with crocodiles in the back.
What?
I'm not joking. Every single place that we went to, where they're like, hey, Matt, we went, like I said, with Matt Wright.
Uh-huh.
He was like, hey, let's go over here. My friend's place got a bar over here. And first he would introduce us to their crocodiles in the back and we make a couple like fun interaction videos.
Oh, yeah, great.
We would go have lunch in his bar and we're like, okay. Great. I love this.
I'm sure for you love that, but for me, you can understand it would terrify me. I'm from New York City, so like I grow the scariest thing around me is a squirrel. So I don't know what dangerous animals are. Like, oh my God, this just seems Australia. I don't know. I'm gonna have to have a lot of confidence one day to get there. It's sad because I really want to get there, but like there's just so much about it that just terrifies me.
Maybe just don't go straight into like the hardcore. Work your way up. Go for 2 weeks. Start in Sydney, Australia. Go look at the animals in the beautiful zoos. Like, go do your deal. And then if someone, you're talking to someone and they give you an opportunity to go a little bit deeper in, go a little deeper in. But yeah, I agree. Probably don't go full throttle first time. So I don't know if you're fully ready for that.
I don't think I am either. Just a few more here out of you, Juliet. Juliet Brewer from the Reptile Zoo is joining us. I see your dad likes to deal with the giant animals, right? Like the really big snakes and the really big like lizards.
He loves the big pythons.
Okay, so I've seen conflicting reports online that I keep looking into. Obviously, I think everyone's fascinated in these big animals, and I want to get Nat Geo reports that the green anaconda is the largest like snake that's out there that they've actually found, and they claim that they found one that normal ones grow from 20 to 30 feet. Is that accurate so far?
I don't believe they've found a 30-foot anaconda.
Interesting, because they claim the largest one they've ever found is 40 feet.
I'm not going to go against Nat Geo here, but I would say if it's not photos, that is a very, very large animal. I want to say, I did hear my dad say the other day, I do apologize, I don't remember, I think it was the largest reticulated python.
Mm-hmm.
So retics get the longest. Burmese pythons and anacondas get the heaviest.
Okay.
Where the anaconda, depending on the literally like genetics of it, can get a little longer than the Burmese, like female Burmese pythons.
Uh-huh.
But reticulated pythons are the longest ones. Like that's their claim to fame. And I think the largest recorded one is 29 feet.
Oh my God.
So I don't know. But again, I am not about to go up against Nat Geo. So, but I would say like, I'm just in Fountain Valley, cute little small Orange County area. I'm not about it.
I see the crazy stories. They found this one supposedly in Brazil, in like the Amazon in Brazil and stuff, where you've got you know jungles and these things are eating like I don't know jaguars for lunch. So the movie. So then you would say the movie Anaconda. Have you seen that movie? The 1999 classic.
I have not, but I know that's not
accurate, right?
Wildly out of proportion.
It's not accurate. Okay.
Wildly.
Do you have all three of the largest snakes in your captivity there?
Of course we do.
So you have all. So you regularly feed these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, not me as a human. Oh. No. But yes, we have them. We breed the reticulated pythons. And then the Burmese pythons we use for birthday parties.
For birthday parties. Like it's incredible to me. Like just for birthday parties. Like it's wild.
And then we have the green anacondas, so the green and yellow anacondas, which are not used for anything. They are mean. So, but all the large snakes that you like see in my dad's account, J Prehistoric Pets, those are all reticulated pythons. From an egg, done the whole process with. So they're pretty socialized. They're nice animals, a lot of them, because we interact with all of the animals throughout their whole life. A lot of them are very tame. Retics aren't always known for being... They tame down, but they do have like a they've got a little bit of a dominant situation for sure that they act out of. Mm-hmm. But we've got some really sweet ones. So
your life, your story, your career really fascinates me. It does. Like as a guy who's not familiar with these crazy, like the most experience I have is like the Bronx Zoo, where I just go, you know, see all. It's a great zoo, yeah, and they do have an insane the reptile.
Cool.
There was a story actually a few years ago where a venomous snake got out of there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I remember it. I think because then I was in like middle school or high school when this happened. And then there were rumors that like because I live in Staten Island, which is a suburb of the Bronx. It's not close to the Bronx, though.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You get people saying, oh, this snake's going to find its way into Staten Island. Someone made up a rumor that it bit an elephant and killed an elephant in the zoo. Like there was whole bunch of crazy rumors that came out of this. But I know that their reptile enclosure is like one of the top ones in the country. And actually...
Yeah.
The Staten Island Zoo, where I'm from, we have a zoo in Staten Island. We actually have one of the largest reptile enclosures too, in the country, which you would never think Staten Island has that, but it's a one last question. Maybe a little personal, but I'm sorry if it is. How does this work in your dating life when you go out to dinner with a guy or for drinks? Like, do you mention immediately? Yeah, you know, I work with 20-foot crocodile alligators on a regular. Like, do you bring them to the reptile zoo afterwards just to show them around? You know, that's just wild to me.
It makes it interesting. Bummer that people just in general they'll like be talking with me on apps or whatever, uh-huh. Which is the last thing ever. And they'll ask like, oh, what do you do? And I usually just say I manage a zoo. I'm not forward in it at all. There's a lot about me. I'm like kind of intense, like not gonna lie, like kind of intense. So I just let them kind of stumble upon it. And then they're like, oh, cool. What kind of animals do you work with? And I go, oh, I work with like alligators and stuffy turtles. And then they're like, oh my God, I recognize you.
Like, yeah, that's me. Yeah. Cool. That is just incredible. Like, yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think
most
of.
Most guys are very intimidated by it.
I would be. I would be. Yeah. I would be both a little intimidated by it, and I'd also be like, damn. Like she works with, like, I'd want to tell my friends about that. Like she works with alligators. That's incredible. Like the whole thing is just, I guess it's more for me that like, cause I've not been around these animals and I've just, the only interaction I have with these guys is like going to Florida and the Everglades and holding the baby ones for like 10 seconds when you take a picture, which is still pretty cool.
Yeah.
But to be living your entire life from as a child being familiar with these as much as they are dogs and cats to us. No, it's weird, but it's pretty freaking cool. I got to be honest. Juliet Brewer from I guess she a reptile handler, you consider yourself, right?
I call it a reptile handler.
Reptiler.
I'm lowballing that one.
Reptile handler from the Reptile Zoo in Fountain Valley, California. You can check them out online, all over social media at the Reptile Zoo. Check them out in person. You can go on tours there and stuff like that. Juliet, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me.
From a Philadelphian, a big Eagle guy, you can follow Vince's podcast on the Eagles, Bell and the Birdman, where they have a lot of interesting content on there. How do you guys, I guess you don't do a lot of New York Jet content, but how do you view the New York Jets?
Yeah, so I keep a little bit of an eye on the Jets. One, because I have a soft spot from going to college in New York when Rex was there, mm-hmm. and I liked Rex and what he was doing. My girlfriend's a Jets fan, so like
oh, wow.
Yeah.
She's clearly made a lot of bad decisions.
Oh, a bunch. The Jets are worse decision than me, but it's close. but yeah, like she watches all the games and all that stuff, so I keep an eye on them. And it's interesting because the Jets... Like, do they have everything available to build a good team? Sure. Do I believe they're going to do it? Not necessarily. But I will say this. With Joe Douglas, who was from Philly in their front office, the same methodology is there, right? It's all about, because same thing you're talking about with the Rangers, team building. What makes team building good? Well, it's valuing positions is part of it. What's really important? What matters? Defensive line, Quinnen Williams, they go do that. Offensive line, Mekhi Becton, Elijah Vera Tucker.
Yeah.
They go after those guys. So they're going to build on the trenches. They found a quarterback. They're going to try to figure out everything else as they go, and you see what hits.
Whose future do you have more confidence in as an outsider, a Jets or the Giants?
Oh God. I mean, I think the Jets right now have better management. And it's crazy to say. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But I think it's better than what the Giants have.
I want to do a referendum, a little public service announcement for Jets fans out there, right? Because the Giants have been such a bleep show over the last, let's say, in my opinion, it's been over the last 5 years. But let's just say over the last 3 months, right? The Joe Judge decisions, firing your coach, firing your GM who's on the way out, the decisions made in the offseason, they've been a bleep show, right? But it seems like Jets fans are taking the Giants' pain and how bad the Giants are and making it seem like, oh, it's not that bad for us. We're in a good spot. Look how bad it is for them. We're in a good... It's not... The grass isn't always that much greener on the other side. It's just not, right? Jets fans... Look at all the things that you say about the future of the Jets, right? It's like building an offensive line, right? You have a ton of draft picks, ton of signing room and free agency, ton of cap room, right? New GM that has chance to build, a fairly young head coach that has a lot of confidence coming in, a young quarterback with a lot of confidence, end of the season playing really well, right? Vince, you got all these things. It's great, right?
Yeah.
Jets fans, you realize that you were in this exact same position just a mere 3 years ago where you thought Mike Maccagnan was your future GM that you were gonna build around, right? You thought Adam Gase, coming off of the first year, was a young, innovative mind that you were gonna be able to build around, right? Sam Darnold finished his rookie year off pretty solid, and you thought this guy might be the future, right? You had a lot of cap room 3 years ago, a lot of cap room. Remember C.J. Mosley? You thought you had Anthony Barr. You had Le'Veon Bell coming over, right? A lot of cap room, a lot of free agency moves. Then you had a ton of draft picks, made a lot of draft signings, right? And then look what happened the next year. Gase gets fired. After the draft, Gase gets Maccagnan fired, and they bring in Joe Douglas. So Joe Douglas didn't get the draft that year. So Maccagnan was left making those terrible draft picks. Anthony Barr backed out of his deal with the Jets to go back to the Vikings. C.J. Mosley got hurt in the first game of the season. Sam Darnold is now a Panther, and everything blew up in your face. So I ask you this, Jets fans, as I try to instill a little more just realization in your lives. Don't sit here and immediately say, oh, well, the Jets' future is just so bright. How could you not be happy for the Jets? It's brighter than the Giants. The question you need to ask yourself is how much... Don't worry about what the Giants are doing. Who cares what the Giants are doing? Worry about your own football team, okay? Jets are in a good spot, not a great spot. There's plenty of teams in the league I'd rather be than the Jets right now. Okay? Sure, it looks like they have a quarterback in Zach Wilson. Are you that confident Zach Wilson is a future NFL star in this league? No. He could be, but no. Say what you want about Robert Saleh. Nice year, right, as a head coach, right? Nice year as a first-year head coach. His defense was horrible. Now, there's not a lot of talent on that defense, but he's a defensive head coach. If they have a bottom-five defense next year, they're going to fire him. They are. Okay? They have a lot of cap room. You have to use that cap room the right way. Yes, they have a lot of draft picks, and I have confidence that Joe Douglas can make good draft picks, but he still needs to hit on those draft picks. So when you sit here with all this confidence saying, like, we were in the same position 3 years ago, and look at it, I mean, it blew up in your face 3 years ago. Why do you have the confidence that it's all of a sudden not going to blow up in your face now? Joe Douglas can figure that out. I have a lot of confidence in Joe Douglas, but... If there's a team, Vince, there's a couple of teams in football that are like this, but if there's a team to screw it up, it's probably the Jets, right?
Yeah, I mean, the track record is clearly there. The last team that's been in the playoffs, it's been since 2010. Nobody else has been even remotely close to that mark. They've won a Super Bowl since, what, the 60s?
67, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, good luck. Like, and that's the thing. It's such a, you know, the franchise has been such a losing franchise when the whole fan base mentality is, hey, we're not in last. Look at these guys in last. All right, well, there's 25, 27 people ahead of you. Yeah. So that's what should matter to you.
The team across town is so bad, and we're not as bad as them. So, hey, We got a bright future. Like, don't know. The Giants have a terrible future. The Jets have a little less than terrible future. You know, the problem I look at, too, is, like, this is a massive project with the Jets. Like, it's not a quick fix. It's not. You know what? Do you know what football team from draft picks of 2013 to 2018, the Mike Maccagnan era, do you know who has the least amount of draft picks to be playing in the NFL right now?
Who?
The Jets.
Yep.
I mean, you look at teams like Jacksonville and Cleveland and the worst drafted teams in the league. I mean, that Maccagnan era could have set you back about a half decade. And now Joe Douglas has to rebuild it. Not as easy as you think. It's not. You got to give guys time. And again, I make this point too, because everyone's so confident in Saleh, and there wasn't a peep about firing Saleh this offseason. Not that there should have been. If they have a bottom 10 defense, bottom 5 defense again next year, and he's a defensive specialist coach, they're going to fire him. Am I wrong?
No.
They're going to fire him and probably make Mike LaFleur the head coach.
And that's why it was such a risky thing to begin with, to go with the defensive coach when you're drafting Wilson number 2 overall. Mm-hmm. Like, you knew what your pick was when you hired Saleh.
Exactly.
So you made that choice. So yeah, unless the defense is good enough to justify it, you can't keep him.
Which is crazy to me. It's just there's a lot of problems with this team, like, that people don't seem to comprehend. Like, the defense is awful. There's no secondary. There's no pass rushers. You have to completely rebuild the defense. Your only bright spot is CJ Mosley, who, down end of his career, to be honest with you. And you have an offense, but do you have offensive weapons? Are there that many weapons? A guy that I'm after for the Jets that I'm looking at, that I'd love for them to look into, is Calvin Ridley. If you can poach him from the Falcons for like a second round pick, and he doesn't need to get paid to get on the field, I'm not paying him. I'm not giving him a long term deal. I'm not giving him that. If he wants to come out here and get a change of scenery and stuff, then I would make that move. But they have a ton of top tier draft picks, right? They have 2 top 10 picks. They're in a good spot. But to build your confidence off of, well, the Giants are so terrible, so we're in a good spot. Like, don't compare yourself to the Giants. You're in 2 different divisions, 2 different conferences. They don't matter to you. The Giants can only really matter to you once every 4 years, and if you ever make the Super Bowl. Which, by the way, I mean, who would like that?
Yeah. Well,
you know what's funny? There's more entertainment behind a Yankees-Mets World Series than there is a Jets-Giants Super Bowl, right? Who would enjoy a Jets-Giants Super Bowl outside of New York?
I would be annoyed about it.
But a Yankee-Met sure. World Series you'd be interested in.
And I watched it when it happened all those years
right?
ago.
Right, in 2000, like, you would be interested in that. But a Jets-Giants Super Bowl, there's no jazzing behind that. There just isn't.
If anything, it's a miracle. Maybe we're watching because we're like, oh my God, the Jets are in the Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
If they're both legit teams, why not?
Because no one cares. Like, who cares about the Jets outside of New York? Like, seriously.
I think
the Giants are more cared about outside of New York, but who cares about the Jets outside of the tri-state area? Have you ever met a Jets fan?
No.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Well, I've never met a Chiefs fan.
I've met Chiefs fans,
but I mean, we live in Philly, and it's
no.
There.
But what I'm talking about is there are still marquee franchises that you will find fans. Like, you've met a Giants fan from Philly. You grew up in Philadelphia.
Plenty.
Both of you have grew up and born in Philadelphia, right? Born and raised in Philadelphia. You've met Giants fans.
Yes.
You've met Cowboy fans.
Yes.
You've met, give me another, Steeler fans.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Those are the premier NFL franchises. You've met fans of those teams. You've never met a Jet fan. And the Jets have a passionate fan base, but you just, it's I don't know, guys. I don't think there's a lot of buzz around a Jet. I don't think the NFL is dying for the Jets to get in a Super Bowl.
Well, it could be the shock factor.
That's,
like,
that's what they want. Again, the same thing as the Chiefs when they were in 2-3 years ago. They want that, like the shock factor of the first time they're there in 40 years, and it's amazing, and it's, oh my God. But when it comes to pure marketability, the Jets are not. The Jets are a small market franchise in a big market city.
Well, how much of that is because they haven't been successful? I mean, if they have sustained, let's say they go on this is a miracle, but let's say they go on a Mike Tomlin run.
No chance. I'm
spitballing here. If they could have a scenario like that where they had some level of sustained winning for a decade, would that change things?
I don't think so. I don't think you're going to find Jet fans coming out of the woodwork just all of a sudden, just that it now exists. You didn't see it in 2009, 2010, right? And they were a legitimate feared team in the NFL in that time period. Now, it was only like a 2-3 year span, but what did you think of the Jets at that time stamp? That time stamp, that 2-3 year, let's give it 2009 to 2012, like that era before the Rex stuff, before the Geno Smith draft pick and the stuff started falling apart. What did you, as outsiders, NFC East fans, how did you view the Jets as an outsider?
I thought they were legitimately one of the most entertaining teams in the league.
Same for you, Taylor?
Yeah, at that point, yeah, they were fun to watch.
Right, like run the ball, great defense, Hall of Famers on the team. Like that was an unbelievable, but still, they at that point, they were only getting like two primetime games a year. They still weren't a high marketable. The Giants are still playing primetime games now, even when they're terrible. That's my point, right?
They got a lot of like media attention, though, I felt.
They did, run. For sure, but that a lot has to do with Rex Ryan, to be honest with you, like saying dumb stuff.
Yeah, so, well, how about this then? I mean, if they had some sort of, because right now the problem is they don't have sex appeal. You know what I mean?
No, there is none, yeah. I mean, so, Zach Wilson's your hope.
But is he going to be
young, like, Russell Wilson type, running around making flashy plays, all out of talent?
He's either got to be like a super bona fide superstar, or you need a guy with great personality that can take the city over. That's a Jet, and they don't have that guy. That guy hasn't been there.
Yeah,
it was Rex. It was Rex.
The last guy they had like that was their coach.
Yeah,
which is a problem. On that note, let's get to our NFL picks. Sam Spencer. Was I off?
Oh, God, you're so close.
We're getting there. It's divisional weekend. I have two more weeks to get this right.
By the Super Bowl.
We'll see. What is the name again?
Sam.
Drop the R.
Yes, it's Sam Spence.
Oh, I was really close.
You're so close.
I'm getting better. 5-1 week for me last week picking games, by the way. My props were a little off, but 5-1 picking games last week. First game of this week. By the way, this is one of the first divisional weekends that I can say all four games are must-watch, right?
Great games.
Yeah, all four games are must-watch. Like, the NFL got lucky here. No bad upsets. They're all tremendous matchups. First one, Bengals at Titans. Bengals are juicy right now, Vince.
Oh, they are, which is why
they're juicy.
I'm going over.
Really?
That's my pick. I'm rooting for a shootout. I'm rooting for insanity. Because, like, the crazy thing is Cincinnati in that first half, how great they played in that first half. And then they just totally died in the second. Just all sorts of bad decisions.
What do you have
whatever.
The over at? That's the question.
VQ Sportsbook, 47.5.
That's a low over. The average is that's telling. I think I was thoughtful on what you would do with the over only because a running team with Derrick Henry back is going to kill a lot of clock generally. So you're kind of like in fear of playing the over in that scenario because the clock's going to be running a lot, so not a lot of points are going to be able to be scored. I like the over there, but I'm going just spread here. I like the Bengals at 3.5. You're not seeing a ton of public money on it because the line hasn't moved. And you would think it would move down to 3. The line being at 3, Titans are a home team. They're giving you 2.5 points in a playoff game at home. So the books are only telling you that the Bengals and the Titans are only separated by about a point. I'm sorry. I just the Bengals have that 2009 kind of Jets feel to it where they're young, they're dumb, they're just out there playing football. Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow connection. The key to this game, and I already have it locked in at 3.5 because I'm afraid it might move to 3 by kickoff. Here's my fear. If Trey Hendrickson doesn't play in this game for the Bengals, if Derrick Henry's going to be able to be neutralized, it scares me a little more. But Taylor, I love the Bengals in this spot.
This is probably the hardest spread-wise for me.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I'm also going to go over 47. That's a perfect number. Mm-hmm. And even if you're worried about Derrick Henry eating up clock, he's the most explosive guy ever. Like, all you need is one big play.
Yeah, he will
boom.
Score at the end of those drives. I am a little fearful of how healthy he actually is. I do kind of fear that they're putting him in there just to have the appeal.
Yeah, he's probably 80%.
Yeah, he's not 100%. Yeah. There's no way.
There's no chance.
Next game, 49ers at Packers. Maybe the most intrigued game of the weekend. A Saturday night, good spot for them. Jimmy G getting hurt again now with the shoulder injury and the hand injury. Also, he tried really hard to lose that game last week against the Cowboys.
Terrible fourth quarter.
The Cowboys tried hard to lose, but so did Jimmy G. And people forget that because of how bad the Cowboy game ended for them. So the storyline of Jimmy G playing terrible down the stretch has gone away because the Cowboys just pooped the bed in the end of that game. Green Bay at 5.5 here. I got it at 4 when the line opened. And it's climbed and climbed and climbed. And it's going to climb more and more.
I didn't know it opened at 4.
It opened at 4, yeah.
Wow.
And it's going to climb. This line might close at 7. Would you be surprised if it closed at 7, Taylor?
Not at all.
Exactly. I fully expect Green Bay to dominate this game. The only thing that scares me is the odds that they have for Super Bowl odds right now is, I believe, Green Bay is about 5-1 and the 49ers are about 4. No, the Green Bay is 4-1, 49ers are 5-1. That scares me a little bit that they're that close. That means the books think that the Super Bowl odds are that close. I think Green Bay is going to just trounce them. I think Green Bay's first playoff game is the NFC Championship game. I really do. I think this game is like a 20-point game at Lambeau. There's too many advantages here for Green Bay, especially with getting Za'Darius Smith back in this spot. If he gets to hit Jimmy G a bunch of times and fall on that shoulder, it's going to be a long day for Jimmy G. Vince?
No, that's fair. You know what it is? I have such a soft spot for San Francisco and what they've done over the past couple of years.
They stay consistently competitive every year.
Yeah, they're always just... They're
always there.
They play such great football. Mm-hmm. And when you think about Shanahan and what he does and using guys like Deebo Samuel... They're going to be competitive. I have a hard time believing that they're going to get blown out of the water. So 5.5 is really appealing to me, and I take that with San Francisco.
So, if you're actually going to bet on this game, you wait till kickoff, right?
Yeah.
If it could get the full touchdown. I'm thinking it's going to go to... Would you be surprised if this moves to 7?
I mean, no. If it's already moved from 4 to 5.5...
It's all... Because that means it's all Packer money. Which scares me a little bit. It's a lot of public Packer money. If it goes to 7, I might re-hedge it and put money on the 49ers. I honestly might, just because that's a lot of points for a playoff game. I just think it's a blowout here. I just really do. Taylor?
I love this Niners team when it's fully healthy, but...
It's not.
Yeah, that, and like you were saying, if you get one play where you hit Jimmy G, or just make him uncomfortable, it's the offense might crumble.
And again, there's too much to... The storyline of Jimmy G playing as bad as he played... At the end of the fourth quarter last, like, people don't even think about that because of how bad the Cowboys ended that game. So you don't even remember how bad Jimmy G was.
Yeah, threw a pick.
Yeah, he was bad at the end of that game. He just was. He tried very hard to lose that game. Just the Cowboys tried a little harder. 3:00 Sunday. Rams, Bucks. There are a lot of people that are afraid to take the Rams in this game. They are. Because they don't want to bet against Tom Brady. I'm taking the Rams. I think the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl. I think they're that hot. Their offense is clicking at the right time. And I don't even think the win against the Cardinals says that much because that's more about the Cardinals being awful. I just think the Rams are in a perfect spot. They're clicking. Von Miller's making a crazy difference on that defense. And you know why? Because when they pressure Aaron Donald so much, it leaves a ton of open room for Aaron Donald. Jalen Ramsey, believe it, is playing out of his mind. I don't know if you've noticed that, Vince. Van Jefferson's been great. Odell has been great. This team's clicking at the right... This team has the vibes... of being hot at the right time. And that's how I feel. I think the Rams are going to beat the Bucks in this spot. I really, really do. Vince, how do you feel?
I'm a turtle deep in his shell. I'm a broken man. I'm not the same as I was a week ago. I talked a lot of smack on the Buccaneers. And Todd Bowles, he spanked me. He spanked me. It hurt. It's been hard to sit. So I'm going Tampa. -2.5. It's that simple for me.
I've got him at 3 still. I don't know about you, Taylor. I have him at 3. Vince Quinn Sportsbook does not have a good line.
Yeah. No. It's a bad line, yeah. But I'm scared.
I am putting my money on Rams money line.
Interesting. You're not going to take the 3 points. I would always take the 3. If they're giving you 3 points, yeah. I would always take the 3 points.
Once the Bucs had, what, two of their offensive line starters taken out?
Yeah, Tristan Wirfs, it looks like he's not going to play.
The rest of the games that the Eagles played, like, wasn't that bad. Like,
Eagles almost covered. They almost backdoor covered that game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and especially against this Ram defense.
A lot more lethal, a lot more pressure on the quarterback.
That's how you beat him. You just make Brady uncomfortable.
Exactly. I mean, easier said than done. But I think the Rams are winning the Super Bowl. That's my pick right now. I really do. I believe they're winning. It might have a little bit to do with the fact that I have a bet from August on them to win the Super Bowl. But, hey, last game of the weekend, probably the most intriguing game, right? The thing everyone's looking forward to the most, 6:30 on Sunday, Bills at Chiefs. Line right now has moved down to Chiefs -1.5. That means if you're telling me that Buffalo on a neutral field is a better team than Kansas City, then people are forgetting that Kansas City's as good as Kansas City is. That they are. I fear a lot of the public is going to love what they saw out of the Bills beating up on Bill Belichick and a not really talented Patriots team and thinking the Bills are that good. Don't forget the Patriots are just not that good. And that's just a new year with an extra team. That Patriots team in most years are not getting into the postseason. And now they get in and they get bounced heavy by the Bills. The Bills aren't home anymore. Arrowhead's a tough place to play. I'm waiting till kickoff when this thing drops to a pick, and I'm taking the Chiefs pick 'em at home. Vince?
Folks, hide your tables. Bills Mafia is winning the Super Bowl.
Oh, here he comes.
That's where I'm feeling it right now. I'm just looking at a team. Look, offense, defense, superstar quarterback, great coaching. All this could blow up after this year, too. I mean, all the head coaching interviews that they're getting, Leslie Frazier, Brian Daboll, this is it. I think this is really it for the Bills. This is their shot, and they know it. I think this is the time for them to go and make it happen. Winner of this game gets a Super Bowl. I think it's Buffalo. I'm going money line.
Winner of this game gets that's. I mean, it's a not a controversial pick. Taylor.
This one's very tough too. Gun to my head, I'm going Chiefs. Just we've seen it before.
Yeah,
we've seen the Bills totally implode. Yeah. And I
have a hard time betting against Pat Mahomes when he's playing like this.
Exactly. If we're comparing Pat Mahomes to Josh Allen, as great as Josh Allen has been this year and the year, year before that, exactly.
You know what? It's one of those spots where you looked really good last week at home, right, for the Bills, and they do have a great home field advantage, but it's a different animal in Arrowhead. It just is. That's a tough play. Football home field advantage means a lot. It really does. And now going to Arrowhead, and the Bills still are a young team too, Vince. It's not like we haven't seen them implode before. So I'm all over the Bills, the Chiefs in this spot.
I'll probably be taking the over because it's been going down. It opened at 55. It's 53.5 right now. Yeah, so I think it's going to keep going down. So once it hits 52, 51, I'll probably go on that.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're an experienced gambler, again, wait for Kansas City to drop. Because it's dropped already. It opened at, minus 3? Minus, I think 3.5 might open.
I'm seeing 2.5.
And now it's dropped a whole point. It's going to drop another point. It's going to drop to a pick 'em. It is.
Well, yeah, once Saturday comes, Saturday night, and hell, even Sunday morning, that's when you're going to see it.
It is. That'll do it for our picks this week. Good luck. I wish you profitable bets and minimal sweats this week. Some food for thought on the way out. Vince, did you know that the M&M brand is rebranding their characters? All of the constant M&M, the classic M&M characters, different colored candies and everything like that, rebranding them to make them more politically correct because the M&M company feels that the M&M characters are not politically correct enough. That'll do it for another episode of New York Groove.